as mentioned, I'm definitely the newest member of this community here, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to be part of such a distinguished panel. It is pretty exciting to meet some of the people to my right. My name is Beth Payne. I'm from the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, and I'm here on behalf of a pretty large group of people working on the PREEMPT initiative, which is preeclampsia, eclampsia, monitoring, prevention, and treatment. Before I start, I have no financial relationships to disclose. But to give some background, you've heard some general epidemiology of maternal mortality globally, and the HCP really follow a similar path as postpartum hemorrhage and the other causes of maternal mortality. The hypertensive disorder of pregnancy include preeclampsia and eclampsia, but also gestational hypertension, chronic hypertension, superimposed preeclampsia. And 5 to 10% of women who become pregnant will be diagnosed with one of these disorders. And the recent epidemiological data show that the HDP are on the rise globally, except for eclampsia. And this is mainly driven by magnesium sulfate, although, as Harshad explained, there are still quite a lot of difficulties in the magnesium sulfate question. 63 to 76,000 maternal deaths annually are attributed directly to the hypertensive disorder of pregnancy, and in high-income countries such as the U.S. and Canada, it's actually the leading direct cause of maternal mortality. In low and middle-income countries, it's in the top three, and it is said to be responsible for about 9 to 25% of all maternal deaths. And although it's the number one cause of maternal death in high-income countries, still 99% of these deaths, when you look at the raw numbers, are occurring in low and middle-income countries. So there's a huge disparity in the burden of disease. There's also a huge impact on perinatal health from this disorder, and the WHO estimates over 500,000 babies die each year because of the hypertensive disorders. I'm sure you're all familiar with this three-delay theory. It comes up a lot. It's quite an old theory, but this is particularly pertinent to the case of preeclampsia and eclampsia. We've been doing quite a bit of work for the last 2 years on this PREEMPT initiative, assessing kind of the status of preeclampsia and the knowledge about preeclampsia in the countries where we're working. And we've broken down the three-delay theory into delays in triage, transport, and treatment. I put this picture up here because it highlights some of the issues that we've encountered. So this picture was taken in Pakistan, in Mathiari, and this is a midwifery unit, and these are two trained midwives. They're very bright. They could answer all of our questions. They're very well trained, but the unit was empty. And what we found was that although there's trained health care providers available, the women weren't accessing the care, partly because there's no word for preeclampsia or eclampsia in many local languages, so people don't recognize what it is. But also, these women were not from the community, so the women didn't trust them, and so they weren't accessing the care that was provided. Unless there was a traditional birth attendant there, then the women would go to the clinic. So there's quite a few issues and barriers to overcome to really improve the maternal mortality as a result of preeclampsia and eclampsia. And it's these delays that we're working towards as part of the PREEMPT initiative. So as mentioned, PREEMPT, it's a four-year umbrella grant that was given to my supervisor, Peter Von Dadelson, at the University of British Columbia. And it has five component studies. They're all community-based studies, so it's really a community and population-level effect that we're looking for. The first study I won't talk about very much. It's in the area of prevention, and this is just started in South Africa and Zimbabwe, and this is a preconception calcium supplementation study. So there is evidence that calcium supplementation, if in calcium-deficient populations, will reduce the diagnosis of preeclampsia, but it's not clear whether or not that's affecting the pathophysiology of the disease, because if you give calcium to a calcium-deficient woman, it acts as a mild antihypertensive. So this study is designed to look at preconception supplementation, whether or not you actually affect the course of the disorder. The second and third components, monitoring and treatment, I will talk a bit more about, so I'll just skip those for now. The fourth component is something called the collaboratory, and this is, to me, one of the coolest parts of the project, and this is bringing together existing data sets and biobanks from around the world of people that have already done research in the area of preeclampsia and eclampsia to try to increase sample sizes and answer some of the bigger outstanding questions that as individual research groups we haven't been able to address. And it's weird that this is a novel concept that hasn't happened all that much in our community, but it is really a powerful tool, and it's something that we should be working towards a lot more. And that's actually headed up by Jim Roberts at McGee Women's Hospital in Pittsburgh. The final component is the knowledge translation component, and this is updating the WHO guidelines. So the first update of the WHO guidelines for the management of hypertensive disorders of pregnancy was done and it published last year. We're hoping to do this process again in about another year's time with the new knowledge that has been generated from this project. So to go back to monitoring, and this is what I'll talk about the most because this is the basis of a lot of the research I've personally been doing. And in the area of monitoring, there's two studies. One is MINI-PEERS, and this is the Preeclampsia Integrated Estimate of Risk study. And MINI-PEERS is a clinical risk prediction model. So it's a model to give individualized risk estimates to women after the diagnosis has been developed or made. And then carrying on from that, there's PEERS on the Move, which is taking the MINI-PEERS model and making a mobile health application for data collection as well as risk stratification that can be used by a community health worker or a nurse. And I actually have the device with me if anyone's interested after. So like I said, MINI-PEERS is a clinical risk prediction model. And so the rationale behind this is if we can identify the women at greatest or least risk of an adverse maternal outcome, you can really guide care more effectively. This is meant to be applied to women after they're diagnosed with an HDP, so it does require blood pressure monitoring before use. And this is specifically targeted to reduce triage delays and improve case identification at the community level. As Harshad mentioned, the screening for preeclampsia and monitoring is really below optimal levels in many places. And the end goal is that if you can identify those women that are at highest risk, you can target interventions and transportation and make better use of the limited resources that are out there. And I have to mention that this study has been going on since before PREEMPT started, and so there was quite a bit of supplementary support from various organizations. The study sites we used are shown here, so we had quite a good geographical spread, and the goal was really to make a model that was generalizable to any setting, and that's why we worked on basically every continent. The predictors that were included in the model were demographics, symptoms, and signs that have been previously shown to be risk factors for the disease, and that would be available anywhere and easy to measure. These included things like gestational age or blood pressure, headache, visual disturbances, that sort of thing. And we were looking at predicting a composite maternal outcome, so it included maternal death, but also any major morbidity that could be associated with the disorder. The model was developed with stepwise backward elimination logistic regression, and I was able to internally and externally validate the model. And I'm really big on the method, so feel free to ask me any questions about this, but I know that might not be what the audience is interested in, so I cut out most of that from my talk. So in the end, we had a cohort of 2,000 women from all of these sites, so it's a large data set, and there was a 19% rate of adverse events at any time after admission, but 12.5% of these events occurred within 48 hours of admission. And the 48-hour time frame is really the one we're interested in, because in 48 hours you can give corticosteroids. You also have enough time to transport to a more appropriate place of care if the woman is at high risk. So the model is really designed to predict an outcome occurring within 48 hours, not at any time. The most common adverse events were blood transfusion, placental abruption, pulmonary edema, but there were 2 maternal deaths and 32 cases of eclampsia. And it's a small number of maternal deaths, and one of the exclusion criteria for the study was if the outcome had occurred before the woman appeared for care. So this really reduced the incidence of eclampsia and some of the other outcomes, because they often happen in the community before women get to the hospital. So that's one thing to note. So the final model included gestational age at admission, the symptoms of chest pain and or dyspnea, headache and or visual disturbances, vaginal bleeding with abdominal pain, epigastric pain, systolic blood pressure, and dipstick proteinuria. So using these simple, readily available clinical signs and symptoms, we can accurately predict which woman is at high risk of having an adverse event within 48 hours. And so the model discriminatory ability is shown through this figure here. If people are familiar with this, the area under the curve was 0.76, and generally 0.7 is the guideline for having an adequate model, so anything above 0.7 is good, so we're there. How is this applied? Well, if you use a cutoff of greater than or equal to 25% predicted probability to define your high-risk group, you actually have a good level of accuracy. It's over 80% accurate, and the likelihood ratio associated with that test is 7. I couldn't leave out all of the statistics, so there you go. But more importantly, what's the potential impact of this? So, like I said, the model was developed and it has been fully validated in low and middle income countries. And the idea is that it could allow standardized and evidence-based monitoring of women with any hypertensive disorder. This could be used as the basis of an educational program or some policy initiatives to get community health workers taking blood pressures and monitoring proteinuria with the proteinuria pen. And it is generalizable to any low and middle income country setting. All the predictors in the model are easy to measure at a community level, so it's appropriate for a community health worker, and it would allow targeting treatments and transport to women who are at the highest risk. The next step, like I mentioned, we've made a mobile health application using this model. And I have that here to show you. And I'm running out of time, so I'm going to keep going. But the main next step is the CLIP study, and this is a community-level interventions for preeclampsia study. And this will be a cluster randomized control trial in India, Pakistan, Nigeria, and Mozambique. And we're going to test a package of care. So the package of care will include community mobilization and education. This is for the women, but also for their families and for the community leaders, because it's important to target the whole community and not just the women themselves with information. We'll be using community health worker cadres, the existing cadres, to train them to use the PEERS tool and to base triage and transport on PEERS predicted probability. But more importantly, it's task-shifting treatment to the community. So as Harshad mentioned, often women don't come to the health center until after their first seizure, or once they get there, there's quite a delay in receiving treatment. So we'll be training community health workers to give a loading dose of magnesium sulfate in the community, in the home, as well as an oral antihypertensive. A lot of talk about preeclampsia and eclampsia often focuses on eclampsia, but eclampsia isn't the only reason women die because of this disorder. Untreated hypertension is also a significant issue, and so bringing an oral antihypertensive to the community we think will have just as much impact as magnesium sulfate. So in summary, using community and evidence-based simple health interventions, we hope to reduce the maternal and perinatal outcomes associated with the HDP on a population level. And probably the biggest lesson we've learned, which is something that is echoed, I'm sure, by many people, is that this really requires support from all stakeholders, so including the communities themselves, academic institutions, NGOs, and governments throughout the process of planning the study is really the key to the success and hopefully the sustainability of the project. And we all, as researchers, have an obligation to think about sustainability for any work that we're doing. So this is the BAMT team in Vancouver. And there's many, many more members to the team. And if you're interested in learning more about the project, you can go to the website and you can actually join and register to join the community. So I'll be happy to answer any questions at the end.
Thank you.